Welcome to episode 763 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive. 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. Our study of Jesus in every book of the Bible takes us now to the book of Ecclesiastes. Traditionally, the book is ascribed to King Solomon, largely due to the opening verse identifying the author as the son of David, king in Jerusalem. However, there are scholars who question Solomonic authorship based on linguistic evidence, which suggests a later dating, perhaps during the post-exilic period. The title, Ecclesiastes, is derived from the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, the Septuagint. It can be translated as preacher or teacher. The Hebrew title is Koheleth, which carries a similar meaning. Ecclesiastes is perhaps the oddest book of the Bible, a mystery book. By the time of the early rabbinic period, the 1st to 2nd century AD, there were debates about the canonicity of several books, including Ecclesiastes. Some early Jewish scholars hesitated to include it because of its seemingly skeptical tone and the absence of traditionally religious themes. It's a wonder it made the cut in the writings or ketuvim of the Jewish Tanakh. And I'm sure many people question its inclusion in the Old Testament. At first glance, it seems existential and out of place. Until we understand the intended audience, we may figure it's an inappropriate book that got in by mistake. Here's the key to this book. Ecclesiastes was written to people who question whether there is a God, and to those who outright reject God. What do they have left in life? Nothing but despair. If there is no God, then life loses any sense of purpose. Ecclesiastes presents the brutal hopelessness of life apart from faith. Life simply doesn't make any sense unless God is part of the equation. If our existence is merely an accident of nature, what Bertrand Russell, the British mathematician and philosopher, described as the outcome of accidental collections of atoms, our lives are futile. But if there is a God and a divine plan, that changes everything. Ecclesiastes addresses the secular mind, showing the logical outcome of a worldview that excludes God. Chapter 1 looks pretty brutal. Verses 2 to 11.
Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes, and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, "See, this is new"? It has been already in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after.
Wow. Apart from God, life has no purpose, profit, fulfillment, satisfaction, or lasting value. Henry David Thoreau, the American naturalist and essayist, conceded that most men live lives of quiet desperation. They're like ships without a rudder. The key word in verse 2 has been translated in our Bibles several ways. Vanity, meaningless, insignificant, and futile. The word literally means breath or vapor. It refers to that which is fleeting, momentary, transitory, of temporary value. Life goes on with us and without us. Does it even matter that we exist? Solomon is exposing the emptiness of life apart from faith. Popular views of the meaning of life are inextricably tied to the dominant views about the origins of life. Stephen Jay Gould, the American paleontologist and evolutionary biologist, said that man is a widely improbable evolutionary event. A detail, not a purpose, and a cosmic accident. David said, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." He said that man was made a little lower than the angels. Philosophers, environmentalists, and sociobiologists have described humans as irrelevant, the greatest threat to the survival of planet Earth. and hopelessly aggressive and destructive. Paul says we were bought with a price. Jesus says, I have called you my friends. Existentialists like Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus argue that life has no inherent meaning, but individuals must create their own. Jeremiah 29 verse 11 responds, For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Utilitarianism argues that the purpose of life is to maximize pleasure and minimize pain. Micah 6 verse 8 counters with, And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Some say life on earth may have begun when microbes migrated here from outer space. Genesis says, In the beginning, God. Others say life sprang up out of a primordial soup of terrestrial chemicals. Nihilists espousing this view argue that life has no purpose or value whatsoever. John says, In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Why were you created? What is your ultimate purpose? What will be the focus of your life when the world comes to an end? Often we take it for granted, but it is hardwired into your DNA. You are made to worship and for worship, and as long as you live, worship you will. It may be your job, it may be a person or a relationship, it may be money, it may be the Dallas Cowboys, it may be Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Drake, or the latest box office superstar. But if you're not worshiping the one true God, you're worshiping someone or something else. To be able to worship, you must first understand who God is. In Philippians, they tell me he has a name above every other name. In Psalms, David says that if he were hungry, he wouldn't tell me. For the world is his and all of its fullness. Every animal in the forest is his. The cattle on 1,000 hills are his. For he spoke and it was done. He commanded and it stood fast. Our feeble, finite, and fickle minds cannot appreciate just how awesome, how powerful, how deserving of worship our Lord God is. He emptied himself of his divinity. He became the Son of Man. Though he was without sin, he took on my sin. Though he was spotless, he took on my stains, my stubbornness, my shortcomings, my sanctimoniousness, my selfishness, my sarcasm, my shameful secrets, my secularism, my sickness, my slandering, my snobbery, and my stupidity. Our minds cannot comprehend the sacrifice made on our behalf. His goodness is limitless. His mercy is everlasting. His love never changes. His word is enough. His grace is sufficient. His reign is righteous. His yoke is easy and his burden is light. To be able to worship, you must first understand who God is. We live in a world where a lot of folk just don't get it. They think God is authoritarian. They think God is critical. They think God is distant. They don't think God exists at all. Our schools are raising a generation of children to believe that God is dead, religion is for simpletons, and life is about getting rich, and then you die and it's all over. Is it any wonder that so many American adults have a diagnosable mental disorder? Is it any wonder that there are so many suicides, school shootings, and people sleepwalking through life hopped up on drugs? In the secular world, they give you tiny little meanings with no ultimate meaning. They give you tiny little purposes with no ultimate purpose. One contemporary writer has said, without worship we shrink, and that is the brutal truth. How many of you are shrinking every day because you are not being refreshed by giving the honor that is due only to God? Worship is synonymous with love. When we truly understand who God is and who we are, we cannot help but adore him. We cannot help but love him. And we express this love in our love of others, in our obedience to his word, not to selected aspects of the scriptures, but to the whole truth. We express this love in our reverence, in our singing, by honoring God with our tithes and offerings, by caring for our bodies, and being careful stewards of our time and talents. We express this love intelligently, not by becoming automatons, but by using the wonderful minds God has given us to study and to reason. We express this love in prayer and in praise. Father, help us to do what we were created to do, to worship you in spirit and in truth. That's our episode. Remember that God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full today.